I'm gonna mess the name up again. How do you say your name again?
Sinkich.
Oh. Okay. And today is April 24, and we are at the Brickyard Cafe, and Sunda is from Bosnia, and the home name is again?
Prijedor.
Okay. Prijedor, Bosnia. And we have talked about the, we're in the front porch of the Brickyard Cafe, and we have talked a little bit about the release farm and everything. So, Sanda, tell me a little bit about your hometown before the war.
Before the war, it was smaller than Bowling Green, but kind of more developed in some ways, and I mean, bigger buildings and just, you know, that type of thing, the bigger downtown, and it was peaceful. I loved it, you know, but I was just like 12 years old when I left, so I didn't get to live my real life in there or nothing, so.
What about your home? Like, describe your home.
Your home? My parents and my brother and I lived in, like, an apartment building. It's different back there. Like, you don't rent apartment. The firm you work for, like my mom worked for, they gave her the apartment to live in. It was ours. And it was, like, two-bedroom apartment, big living room, kitchen, two bathrooms. No, one bathroom. Mm-hmm.
And, so you shared a room with your brother then?
Mm-hmm.
What's the favorite thing? One second. We're on the front porch, so there's going to be a lot of noise. What was the most favorite thing about your apartment that you remember, like your bedroom?
Like my bedroom?
Yeah, or just your room.
My little shelf with dolls above my bed, I guess.
Yeah. All right, so tell me about when you left, Bosnia.
Mm-hmm.
When you left your home and the war.
The war before you.
The day that you had to leave your house. Tell me about that.
Okay. We moved from our apartment to my grandparents' house and lived with them for a couple of months, my dad's family. And my mom went to Banja Luka, which is like an hour and a half drive away from where I'm from. And she comes back around 12 o'clock and she's like, we're leaving today. In like hour and a half, you know. But most of our things were already packed, but you know, it was just all of a sudden all these people were there. All our family, our friends, everybody was there. And I mean, it was really depressing and my dad, let me see how to say this. His best man from the wedding. He was in the army then, so he was going to drive us to the other city because it wasn't safe for us to go by ourselves because my dad's Muslim and my mom's a Serb as well. And we went there and the convoy that we were supposed to go with to Croatia was canceled. So we stayed at my mom's uncle's house who lived in Banja Luka for maybe a week or two and then we left.
How did you've told me that you lived in the tent city on your way out?
Yeah, when we left Banja Luka,
Chen,
Sasha, when we left Banja Luka, we were in like nobody's land, what they call it. It's between Bosnia and Croatia, and that was like army from Nepal controlling that zone. Nepal army were controlling that zone, and it was just like big tents, you know, and there was like about 700 people living there, basically, you know, and there was like two bathrooms, one women's movement. Food, we got two meals a day, and then we brought, they come in the morning with these big garbage bags full of bread. You know how bread is when you like cut it when it's really hot, you know, well, that kind of bread. But it wasn't cut, it was just chopped up into pieces and had mud on it and everything else. And then in the morning they were serving soups. If you get like a white soup in the morning, they'll add some red sauce, so it would be red soup at night, you know, but the same thing basically. And then sometimes they would give us these little tuna fish cans, and twice we got the lunch bucket, and it was just some like little can of ham and some crackers, things like that. Oh, we couldn't take showers for 7 days. Well, we were lucky because we were there only for 7 days because we had family in Croatia, in Zagreb, capital of Croatia. But I know that there were people who were living there for about a year, you know, under those conditions. So it was pretty bad. And there was just like ground in Bosnia, you know. And I mean, winters in Bosnia are cold and snowy, and it was January. So there was no heat. Well, there was like two little heating things, but that was nothing for 700 people, you know.
Yeah. How many people were in one tent that would stay and sleep in a tent?
That was just one tent for all 700 people. Yeah.
How did you divide up the tent then?
Well, we had the bunk beds. How do you call
bunk those? Beds? Yeah.
So when we got there, there was like, I don't know how many of us in one bus. We were standing up because we couldn't sit down. It was crowded. And we got our stuff, our, you know, clothes and everything. And we went inside, and there was just like beds. All the beds were like on one side. So you had to construct your own bed, bunk beds. And we had two bunk beds, you know. So it was like my mom and me were sleeping on one, my brother was sleeping by himself, and my dad was sleeping by himself, and then we had food on one because my mom and dad took some food with them, but it only lasted for a couple of days.
Yeah.
So. Then we had these blankets, and we like, you know, just put them on one side of the blanket so nobody can see you in there. Mm-hmm. You have some privacy at least, you know. But the blankets were just wet, stinky, dirty, you know. And then my mom took mine and my brother's blankets from home in the sleeping bag, so that was okay.
What did you do during the day?
Nothing, just sit there and wait for somebody to show up and tell you that you can go.
So what were you waiting for then in the tent? Like, because you had gotten there because you had to leave because of the war, is that right? Or
basically, we were waiting for... There was this Fischer organization that got, he was German, his last name was Fischer, and he had a couple of different places in Croatia where the refugees would go until they're able to go someplace else, but that was only if you're going to Germany, because if you were going to the United States, you weren't supposed to be there. And then my dad asked him if we could just ride in his bus to Zagreb, because he has... his cousin lives there, my uncle Martin. I call him uncle, but he's not my real uncle anyway. And they said that's fine, but we had to pay something that we did. And then when we got there, my dad's cousin's mother died, so we couldn't just, you know, go there right away. But they told us we could stay with them, with Fishers, you know, in the, there was like a old school, you know, just a couple of rooms with about 200 people in each, you know. But food was better there.
Yeah.
Food was much better. Yeah. We stayed there for like 5 days.
And
they came together.
And how did the cousin die?
I'm sorry?
How did the cousin die?
My dad's cousin's mother.
Uh-huh.
She was old. She was, it was natural.
But it was en route between.
Yeah, I mean, like, she lived in a little apartment, you know. Uh-huh. And we were supposed to stay with her. And the day that we moved to, came to Fisher's organization, she died. And the funeral was next day, and day after the funeral, our cousin comes against us to live in his mother's apartment, who died just like 2 days ago.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay. What did you carry with you when you had to choose something to take with you?
What did I take with me? I took two of my Barbie dolls. Ken. their clothes. I had a couple of tapes from Bosnia, you know. This thread that we were making bracelets out of. But those dead tapes. Just some silly things. I can't remember right now. That's about it. I don't remember.
How about your family, the rest of your family?
Well, we took our clothes with us, but no, just basically all of the warmer clothes, you know, just the, our pictures, photo albums, just, you know, things that meant a lot, you know,
yeah.
that you could take with you, and though sometimes it would let you take no photographs with you, no pictures over the border, you know.
They wouldn't? And that must be devastating.
Yeah. Really and hard. Then gold and things that are valuable, they wouldn't let you take that with you either. They would take it away. So my mom was wearing these boots, you know, like high boots. And on the inside, she like cut them on the inside and just took like some thread and put like all of our rings and all the jewelry and little pieces of thread and stuck it in her boots and then sew it up on the top. So she was carrying all of our jewelry in her shoes for like 4-5 weeks.
And she made it?
Yeah.
It all came in?
Yeah.
Are you wearing any of it?
Not right now.
Not right now. It's the gold?
It's gold, yeah.
Okay. So how did you finally get out then?
From Croatia?
Yeah.
Well, when we came to Croatia, we had an interview with American Embassy officer after like a month, and then another interview after another month, and then they called us and they said you have a flight in like 2 weeks, in a week. Mm-hmm. So, that's
about it. What did you expect Bowling Green to be like?
Well, I first moved to California.
Oh, okay.
Then moved to Croatia. But the way I was taking every place in the United States, going to be including Bowling Green, is like LA, New York, Chicago, from things I've seen on TV, in San Francisco, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So basically I was expecting the great old paradise, you know, things like that.
So your first day was in California then?
Uh-huh.
How long did you live in California?
For 9 months, 10 months.
What brought you from California to Bowling Green?
My mom and dad couldn't get a job back there. We were on welfare for those 9 months. The place where most refugees and migrants were living in was just trash, and my parents didn't want us to live there, you know. There was lots of criminal crime going on and things like that. So we moved. That was in San Jose,
okay,
where they lived in. So for first 6 months, we lived with our house friends who sent us the papers to come here.
Mm-hmm.
And then we decided to move on our own, so we moved to Los Gatos. But that's one of the expensive cities, you know, small town. So our apartment was $900 back then. That was 3 years ago. It was $900, two-bedroom apartment. And we only were receiving $750 to pay our apartment and all of the bills for it, you know, per month, for welfare. So they had to add some more money to it every single month, you know, and then, of course, the bills and everything else, you know. So lived like that for 9 months and then decided to move. We had also some cousins who lived here.
Okay.
In Bowling Green, but it was just impossible for them to get a job back there in California.
So what about your first day in Bowling Green?
When our cousins came to pick us up, and then we came here with a bus because my mom didn't want to fly in an airplane. So it was a 4-day trip from California to Bowling Green. No, 3 days, 2 nights. Yeah, something like that. And there was, I don't know where exactly the little bus station was, but they came and pick us up. And we were passing through downtown, and I was like, so, do you guys have a downtown? They were like, this is it. And I was looking around. I couldn't, it was like maybe 7 or 8 o'clock at night in February. And I was looking, I couldn't see nobody, I couldn't see no lining. Like, this is downtown? And they're like, yeah. Because where I live in Los Gatos, it was so much like Europe, you know, like little downtowns, some people walking every single night, little cafes, you know. I just couldn't believe that this is a downtown. And it was so weird, different.
How did you find your first place to live here?
We lived with our cousins for maybe a week. And then, well, some people have been met over our cousins, you know. They said, they told us that the apartment building they live in has apartments open. So we wanted to come out and check it out. And so we just decided to live there. And we lived there for a year and a half.
All right, you've been going to high school here in Bowling Green.
Mm-hmm.
What was your experience the first day you went to high school here?
Well, I finished 8th grade here also.
Okay.
And then I went to high school. But high school in Europe, school is much more difficult and hard. I mean, you have basically 13 different classes from 7th grade, you know, mm-hmm. each week. So I was expecting it to be so much harder than actually is, you know. It's just, you know, like, is this, am I back in the 4th grade?
How many Bosnians were in, went to school with you at that time? Were you
in high school?
Yes.
No, there was a lot of them. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of Bosnians.
So, did you feel comfortable there, or?
Yeah, pretty much, you know, because I knew most of them already since I was living here for about a year. Well, maybe like 7 months before I started high school, since I finished 8th grade here also,
uh-huh.
So I had some friends there.
And could you speak English when you...
Very little. Well, you know, I could understand a lot, but I wasn't speaking pretty good. So.
And now you work with the ESL classes?
Yes.
What do you think is the hardest thing for people who have just gotten here to adjust to?
The way of life. Everything's in the kind of speed and zone type of thing. Just, you're always rushing.
Here?
Yeah. You're always rushing somewhere. Especially if you go to school and work.
Mm-hmm.
My house is like a motel. I sleep there and have breakfast. And that's about it.
Well, you've worked since you got here.
Yeah.
At Houchin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. About how many hours a day?
In Houchin?
Or just how many hours a day do you work?
I work 3 hours every day, at least. And then Friday and Saturday night. Fridays is like 5 hours. Saturdays, double shift.
And you go to school full time.
Uh-huh.
What would, if you wanted to tell people something about your experience here, what would you want people to know?
Just not to depend on anybody, you know, to be independent on their own. From the very beginning, because otherwise they'll just keep on, you know, depending on somebody, not themselves, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And to try to avoid as much as possible the people from their country, because otherwise the language will never come to them, you know, it's so hard. I mean, my dad is always around Bosnia. He understands English, but he can't speak at all. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons. I mean, you have to realize that you have to start all over on your own. Again, you know, starting from buying a simple spoon to eat with, you know, to build it up, to buy a car, a new house, things like that.
How about food? Buying food. Shopping for food here. What
well,
did you
we have Golden Key, of course.
Best chocolates around. Is it... Does your mother have a hard time cooking? Or? What kind of food do you eat?
She always experiments with something. Now she's in Chinese. Uh-huh. She's got these books, Chinese recipes. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's always just trying new things. And but I love her cooking, because I should go sleep.
Do they miss it?
I'm sorry?
Do they miss Bosnia?
My parents?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My dad was there last year, and my mom and me were going this summer, so. My brother doesn't want to go now. We're just ignoring the whole situation about going back there.
Do you have family there still?
All of my dad's family is there, except for his sister and her family. And all of my mom's family is there.
Alright, how about a children's story? Tell me a story, a children's story that you remember being told.
A children's story?
Yeah.
What's the, I don't know how you call it in English, but the little red hat girl, you know, the wolf and the whole situation with Granny.
Uh-huh, the little Red Riding Hood?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
That was, I think that was my first story.
Okay, why don't you do Little Red Riding Hood in your language?
No, don't let me do that. No, please.
Okay,
no,
you don't
no,
have
no.
to do that.
Please.
That's fine. I'm just, for everybody that I've been interviewing, I've been having them say something in their language. And what would you like to say? You can say whatever you want. I just thought I'd get a story out of you. You don't have to do it.
So it's something you want me to say.
I know, but I won't... You know, I won't understand you. But the point is so that somebody who listens to the tape one day will have that story in the language.
I don't know what to say.
Describe your grandmother.
My grandmother?
Yeah.
It's so much easier to describe it in English, though.
Okay, well, tell me about your grandmother in English. Maybe you'll come up with something later.
Okay, well, I never met my mom's mother. Mm-hmm. She died when my mom was in high school. But my dad's mom, she was just so special to me, you know. She was a business lady. She took care of me from the day I was born until we moved from Bosnia.
Oh, do you want me to stop the tape?
No,
okay.
And she was the type of person who would always put everybody else before themselves and help everybody else and need some help. Especially her grandchildren and her children. And she died the day we moved to Kentucky.
Oh.
And she was always saying that she'd be able to rest in peace the day she knows that we're safe and sound. And that's exactly what happened. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. Here, I'll stop the tape.
Okay.
I'll stop the tape. All right, I'm back with Sonda again. And we're getting ready to conclude the interview, and I just want to ask you, Sonda, what you would tell to your grandchildren, what you want them to know about your life here, or your great-grandchildren.
I know I'll be talking a lot about my past and life in Bosnia, and I would love them to hear this tape, but what I would like to tell them is there's always two ways. You know, one of those ways will always be a way out of any kind of situation, you know. and it's just, you have to decide which way to take, you know. And even when you feel, you know, just feel down and like helpless, there will always be somebody, you know, who'll be able to help you to get back on the track.
Can you say it in Bosnian now for them?
Let me think a little.
You can say anything. I know.
Things like that are hard to translate. You know.
Okay. Well, you don't.
Because I basically think in English.
Right.
Do you?
You think in English,
though? Uvijek postoji izlaz za svaku situaciju. I uvijek na svijetu postoji osoba koja će se naći da nam pomogne.
That's good. And today is the fourth year that you've been in bowling
camp. Yeah.
Right. Anything else that you'd like to add or?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Sandra.
Welcome.